important to get yourself aware of the situation that the poem takes place in. So this one tells us where the second one there on the left, in the room of the bride elect. So that's where we are. Potter uses a lot of quotes. As you can see in the subalterns up there, he likes to create speaking voices in his poems, and that's important that we pay attention to that when we read him, so that we know what is narrative or explanatory and what is quoted material. So somebody says, "Would it have been the man of our wish?" sighs her mother, to whom with vehemence she in the wedding dress, the wife-to-be, "Then why were you so mollyish as not to insist on him for me?" The mother, amazed, "Why, dearest one, because you pleaded for this or none. But father, you should have stood out strong. Since then, to my cost, I have lived to find that you were right and that I was wrong. This man is a dolt to the one declined. Ah, here he comes with his buttonhole rose. Good God, I must marry him myself."
Oh, boy.
What a life.
That's hardy. The next one, a little bit different tone. The Impercipient. 25. Yeah, on the top. And we are at a cathedral service. "That with this bright believing band I have no claim to be, that faiths by which my comrades stand seem fantasies to me, and mirage mists their shining land, is a strange destiny. Why thus my soul should be consigned to infelicity? Why always I must feel as blind to sights my brethren see? Why joys they found I cannot find abides a mystery. Since heart of mine knows not that ease which they know, since it be that he who breathes all's well to these breathes no all's well to me, my lack might move their sympathies and Christian charity. I'm like a gazer who should mark an inland company standing unfingered with, hark, hark, the glorious distant sea, and feel, alas, 'tis but yon dark and windswept pine to me. Yet I would bear my shortcomings with meek tranquility, but for the charge that blessed things I liefer not have be. Oh, doth a bird deprived of wings go earthbound willfully? Enough. As yet disquiet clings about us. Rest shall we." Now let's look at page 27. The Respectable Burglar, and the Higher Criticism. Run your eye down the right-hand side of his lines there, and what do you notice? Got hung up on the one rhyme, didn't he?
Yeah.
So you can see he's engaged in a kind of a tour de force here, a demonstration of a feat of skill, but it's worth listening to, I guess. "Since doctors now declare that clerks and people must prepare, if Adam ever were, to hold the flood of local scare, to argue, though the stolid stare, that everything that had happened ere the prophets to its happening swear, that David was no giant slayer, no one to call a god or bear, in certain details we could spare, but rather was a debonair, shrewd bandit, skilled as a banjo player, that Solomon sang the fleshy fair, and gave the church no thought whate'er, that Esther with her royal wear, and Mordecai the son of Jer, and Joshua's triumphs, Job's despair, and Balaam's ass's bitter blare, Nebuchadnezzar's furnace flare, and Daniel in the den of fair, and other stories rich and rare were writ to make old doctrine wear something of a romantic air. That the day widow's only heir, and Lazarus with cadaverous flare, as done and oiled by Piombo's care, did not return from Sheol's lair, that jail set a fiendish snare, that Pontius Pilate acted square, that never a sword cut Malchus's ear, and, but for shame I must forbear, that did not reappear. Since thus they hint, nor turn a hair, all church going will I forswear, and sit on Sundays in my chair and read a moderate man Voltaire."
Wow. Or you need an airy exercise.
I haven't liked that one, but rhymes all the way down. It's not quite as funny.
Let's, somebody read one of the other ones. Carl, you want to read one of those? How about in church? Have you been in church?
Once.
All right, go for it.
And now to God the Father, he ends, and his voice thrills up to the topmost tiles. Each listener chokes as he bows and bends, and emotion pervades the crowded aisles.
Then, it should be.
Then the preacher glides to the vestry door and shuts it and thinks he is seen no more. The door swings softly ajar, meanwhile, and a pupil of his in the Bible class who adores him as one without gloss or guile sees her idol stand with a satisfied smile and reenact at the vestry glass each pulpit gesture in deaf, dumb show that had moved the congregation so.
Nasty.
He was watching it.
How about outside the window? Somebody want to read that one?
My stick, he says, and turns in the lane to the house just left, whence a vixen voice comes out with the firelight through the pane, and he sees within that the girl of his choice stands raiding her mother with eyes aglare for something said while he was there. At last I behold her soul undraped, thinks the man who had loved her more than himself. My God, 'tis but narrowly I have escaped. My precious porcelain proves its delft. His face has reddened like one ashamed, and he steals off, leaving his stick unclaimed. Actually, I remember that.
Delft is, oh, that's a dictionary, but I can tell you.
Thank you.
Delft is a very low grade of pottery. Kind of worthless, just a low grade, cheap.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. The Vega of automobiles. The Vega still made?
The Edsel.
Did anybody have to Edsel? They're rare, no. They've survived. I think the blinded bird is worth hearing. Somebody want to read the blinded bird to us? You see the full scope of what this fellow can do here.
They sound so much better when you read them. I didn't want to read it, so I'm going to pass.
He's not easy to read. He really kind of trips you up.
If you don't know him, yeah.
So zestfully canst thou sing, and all this indignity with God's consent on thee, blinded ere yet a wing by the red-hot needle thou, I stand and wonder how so zestfully thou canst sing. Resenting not such wrong, thy grievous pain forgot, eternal dark thy lot, groping thy whole life long after that stab of fire, and jailed in piteous, pitiless wire, resenting not such wrong. Who hath charity, this bird? Who suffereth long and is kind, is not provoked, though blind, and alive, and sepulchred? Who hopeth, endureth all things? Who thinketh no evil, but sings? Who is divine, this bird?
So it wouldn't fly away from the other.
We had all the things.
Is there a reason for blinding a bird?
The blinded bird?
Yeah. Why was he blinded? Would there have been a purpose?
Anybody know that practice?
By the red hot needle?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Why did people do that?
Was it a common practice?
So that it wouldn't fly away and would be there to sing?
Sure.
But
it
could have clipped
his wings. It becomes a bird. Did you? As children on the farm, we used to take chickens and tuck the head under the wing and rock them this way a couple of times. Just, and then set the chicken down and they would stay there for a long time. Mm-hmm. And a bird, almost any animal. I used to live trap squirrels to get them out of my yard and then haul them for miles away, and many miles so they didn't come back. But and if I didn't have time to remove the squirrel before work in the morning, I would simply take an opaque blanket and throw it over this live trap, and immediately the squirrel would be subdued. Total quiet, would not move. And I could peer under there and that squirrel would be in the exact same spot when it was as it was when I had left in the morning. Anyhow, that was a practice and I don't know how common it was in this country, England. This is he's a British and English boy. I don't know if it was more common there, but it's a way to keep them quiet, sitting, I guess.
Yeah.
Well, let's see what else should we read. You've got to read one or two more. On page 28. The man he killed on page 28. Somebody want to read that one?
He and I but met by some old ancient inn. We should have sat us down to wet right many a nipperkin. But ranged as infantry and staring face to face, I shot at him as he at me and killed him in this place. I shot him dead because he was my foe. Just so, my foe, of course he was. That's clear enough, although he thought he'd list, perhaps, offhand, like, just as I was out of work, had sold his traps, no other reason why. Yes, quaint and curious war it is. You shoot a fellow down. You treat if met where any bar is, or help to half a crown.
Drag that by me slowly
again. Try it again?
Drag that by me slowly again.
The same one? The man he killed. Had he and I but met by some old ancient inn, we should have sat us down to wet right many a nipperkin. But ranged as infantry and staring face to face, I shot at him as he at me and killed him in his place. I shot him dead because he was my foe. Just so. My foe, of course he was. That's clear enough. Although he thought he'd list, perhaps, offhand, like, just as I, was out of work, had sold his traps, no other reason why. Yes, quaint and curious war is, you shoot a fellow down, you treat, if met where any bar is, or help to have a crown. Mm-hmm. Quite true, isn't it? Are you digging on my grave? That's on the same page there. Ah, are you digging on my grave, my loved one, planting rue? No, yesterday he went to wed one of the brightest wealth has bred. It cannot hurt her now, he said, but I should not be true. Then who is digging on my grave? My nearest kin? Ah, no, they sit and think, what use? What good will planting flowers produce? No attendants of her mound can lose her spirit from death's gin. But someone digs upon my grave. My enemy? Prodding sly? Nay, when she heard you had passed the gate that shuts on all flesh soon or late, she thought you no more worth her hate and cared not where you lie. Then who is digging on my grave? Say it, since I have not guessed. Oh, it is I, my mistress dear, your little dog, who lives near, and much I hope my movements here have not disturbed your rest. Ah, yes. You dig upon my grave. Why flashed it not on me that one true heart was left behind? What feeling do we ever find to equal among humankind a dog's fidelity? Mistress, I dig upon your grave to bury a bone, in case I should be hungry near this spot when passing on my daily trot. I'm sorry, but I quite forgot it was your resting place. Well, the poem that I would like to hear you discuss is The Darkling Thrush. That's on page 24. Because I have a question that I cannot answer. The Darkling Thrush, December 1900. What did you miss?
I'll try. right?
Good.
I leaned upon a coppice gate when frost was specter gray, and winter's dregs made desolate the weakening eye of day. The tangled vine stems scored the sky like strings of broken lyres, and all mankind that haunted nigh had sought their household fires. The land's sharp features seemed to be the century's corpse outleant, his crypt the cloudy canopy, the wind his death lament. The ancient pulse of germ and birth was shrunken hard and dry, and every spirit upon earth seemed fervorless as I. At once a voice arose among the bleak twigs overhead, in a full-hearted even song of joy unlimited. An aged thrush, frail, gaunt, and small, in blast-beruffled plume, had chosen thus to fling his soul upon the growing gloom. So little cause for carolings of such ecstatic sound was written on terrestrial things afar or nigh around, that I could think there trembled through his happy goodnight air some blessed hope, whereof he knew, and I was unaware.
Why don't you regroup into two groups, three in one and four in the other? All right.
All women in one, all men in the other?
No. Are you two related?
Yes.
Well, you split then, will you?
Okay.
I'd say let's have one man over there. We should at least have that. And then how are we going to see that? Would Betty, you want to come over here?
Okay.
Good. Okay. Here. She can come over here. And you go with over there.
He's going over there.
Okay.
He can come over here.
And what's your assignment, sir?
Well, I want you to know that point perfectly so that you can answer my question when I get to it. All right?
I'm not sure, but I think it's probably just a fancy decoration on the heat. I think it's a cold winter day and getting along toward the evening, and I'm not sure what vine stems, but that's a type of cloud.
Maybe it's a leaf or something.
And it's scored the sky. Like streams of broken water. Everybody's gone home. It's cold.
A century's corpse out leaned.
The beginning of 1900.
That's an old form of lean.
What is?
Lent is an old form of lean. Past tense.
All right.
Oh, okay, yeah. It's the turn of the century.
Okay.
Couldn't possibly. More sensible ones have gone inside. It's almost like death.
Enthusiasm, germism, fervor, this would be more.
Just doesn't seem to be. I have shrunk it hard and dry. You don't have to look for anything to be born. Everything green to come. Dead.
The noise must have flown and the noise
was a little thrush. Puny as its feathers all blown around. Comes up with this.
But he was old. He couldn't travel.
A little cause for caring.
Frost.
Cold.
Winter.
Yeah.
Well, he personifies
not much daylight, but he's thing in his.
Those are capitalized or else personifications, I guess. Unless he's talking about his friend Robert Frost in the first. John Winter.
He was before Robert Frost.
He was, yes.
Yeah.
He died in 1928.
Hardy? No, I'd say Hardy was the author.
The way Hardy writes, it makes me.
But there's something.
There's a twist in here that we're.
Is this bird, is he trying to, is bird them or something else? Is there.
That makes me wonder if the thrush happens always to.
Some symbolism here that we aren't.
But the thrush wasn't in such good shape, but still it came forth from them.
Is there some symbolism here?
Thrush isn't going to be around much longer.
But still, that was such a miraculous, the thrush came.
We don't have a bird, just the cold night air and the bird, a little bit of Christian, that's all.
Less of hope where it was.
Darling has such a static sound. Binds them for
was written on terrestrial things afar.
No, the clouds look like.
Growing.
Binds them skirt the sky. Is that a type of cloud?
What is it?
Isn't it?
Lent.
Yes, I'm going to pronounce it correctly from now on.
I hope you're right. Is it a book?
I know why the keys burn so.
I would guess it's probably a type of copper treatment.
Did you? Yeah.
Why?
Did I read me wrong?
Could be the
type
of what,
lacing
or wiring or.
It's in that place, and it might as well make the best of it. It seems to cheer itself up. It's everything else is so dreary around it. That's the only thing it can do is sing. What can a bird do in a cage? It's in jail. But it just sings.
It has to be the sun.
Bind stems score the sky. I thought maybe it was a type of. Describing the
fence.
Scary.
So that you see it against the wall.
It could be either one. I would think there was.
Even the landscape had sharp features.
What did they look like?
They looked like broken lyre strings.
So I guess it would have to be.
And lyre strings are more.
Of 100 years.
More like wheat strings. So it would have to be. Looking up through the, looking up through a trellis or something.
Have you seen hops?
December 1900. Notice that's the important.
Century. And that bobcat.
I never see them grow, but I know they grow up on vinyl trellises and vines.
With all the tiredness of this, this is probably his New Year's Eve thing. His New Year's Eve thought about this. I don't have any hope.
It's a downer.
The
bird is ready to do it. The bird has seen a few years.
Why is the bird hopeful?
Because he's not as dumb as Hardy.
Can we get together in about 3 minutes?
Sure.
Yeah, we're already now.
Okay, all right. Let's make a circle right here. That's not a serious outfit, I believe they are.
You're dragging your basket making.
I want to leave my basket.
Just so you don't break your basket.
Yes, all that hard work.
Again, I would like a private secret vote so that you're not influencing other members of your group before you show your mind. And my question is this. Does Hardy want us to think that the thrush sings more so because it has special celestial knowledge or terrestrial knowledge? Because it knows something about heaven or because it knows something about earth? Now, they won't vote yet until people close their eyes. You understand the question?
Say that again.
Does Hardy want us to think that this thrush breaks out in that full-hearted evensong because the thrush has some knowledge about heaven or about earth? Now, if you close your eyes and give me a vote, how many say that it's because the bird has knowledge of heaven? How many say because the bird has knowledge of earth?
I'm changing my vote.
It's a nice balance. 3-4. The score is 4-3. It's in the ninth inning, and
was it that?
Okay, well, go for it.
Thomas, sorry.
David, and I don't know your names.
I'm George.
George.
Mm-hmm.
Eunice.
Julie.
Eunice.
Eunice. They say Earth. It is 7. We don't go to dinner until that's...
We were divided by the groups we were
in. No, those no. 3.
Could the thrush, the author could make the thrush, this could be, you could, they could personify it as anything, but the thrush in itself would only know about earth. He just knows the things that he sees and feels and hears, and it's a cold night, and he's old, maybe he hasn't been able to migrate. It says he's old and frail. And gant, you know, but he can still sing. And that's the only thing he's got left to do. And he's gonna make the best of a bad situation. And he just sings.
I settled, right?
No,
I didn't. No, he didn't.
Okay. Yeah, how does he know the bird doesn't know earthly things? Heavenly things. He doesn't know that. I mean, he's assuming that.
You say David doesn't know that or Hardy doesn't know that.
Yeah, or neither one. I mean, he's assuming. We all assume that.
Well, let's see what we can find in the poem to support or to defeat.
Okay.
Go ahead.
Yeah, I think when he says that, I think.
Where does he say that? What stanza?
The last two lines. His hat, the bird's happy good night air, some blessed hope capitalized, whereof he knew and I was unaware. Well, both of them would know the land, but they've lived in it. But that hope is something that they haven't, well, it's there, but probably the bird knows more, has more hope than the writer.
But the author is saying that I could think there trembled there through his happy good night air some blessed hope.
Mm-hmm.
He may think it, but the bird may be earthbound and singing at that time of day because he always sings at that time of day.
Carl, should respond to that.
First of all, he says, no terrestrial. This bird has been flying for years.
Yeah,
His plume, his feathers are beruffled because he's been up in the blasts. He may be down here right now, but he's been up there. He knows something that nobody on this terrestrial ball has experienced, except a few aviators, I suppose. But even so, notice the flight of the bird is something quite different. And to be sure, he has. If he has, he may well have done some
migrating in the past, even if he isn't this year, and has seen the hope of what's coming back year after year. There's lots of it there. It's just filled with celestial stuff.
He talks about the bird's soul, thus to fling his soul upon the growing
bloom. I'm going to ask a follow-up question about what Carl said, okay? Yeah. Mm-hmm. Do you agree that the bird's plumes are beruffled because he's been flying, George? Is that what ruffled the plumes?
Well, I assumed it was this day's storm, or that he just backed into the wind, but...
The cold is off.
He's going to fluff his feathers anyway because it's cold out. But the blast be ruffled, that assumes that there's either... He's either out in a stormy day or there has been a trial of some sort, a storm.
What do you think disturbed him, the plumes, Betty?
Well, I think he was aged, as they point out, frail, gaunt, and small, and he no longer had a beautiful, smooth plumage. He was just on the edge of dying, and this is his swan song, more or less.
So it's age, you think it's age?
I think it's age.
What do you do with the word blast?
And blast, well, it's the middle of winter. There's a stormy blast. It's cold out there.
So did age disturb the plumes or did a blast?
Both.
I found something else.
Go ahead. About the plumes?
No, but it's close to it. All mankind that haunted night had sought their household fires. This bird had never gone inside, and year after year, because it's old, and here it's New Year's Eve, and he's known winters before and didn't get to get inside. He's had blasts year after year. He has survived, and he knows as we go into this new year, there's going to be a spring.
There's going to be what?
Spring.
So you're saying he has knowledge of Earth.
He had knowledge of Earth, like no man does.
Is that a change of vote for you?
No,
Well, I thought you said he had knowledge of heaven.
He does.
And Earth.
And Earth.
Okay. Shall we vote again? So,
it's a tiebreaker.
Okay. You know what a mud muffler is? Do you? Really?
Exactly.
You know that word?
Sure. You sit up, you're on fence with your head. On both sides.
Yeah. A fence sitter. A mud bumper, have you heard that?
I've heard about it.
Yeah? A fence sitter. You're sitting on the fence. And
your head's on one side and your womp's on the other.
I guess it's awesome.
Let's stay with the point. So, are you saying, Carl, that Hardy does not want us to think that it has special knowledge of one or the other of those domains?
Oh, Hardy has much more. He's sunk in the earth. He's...
No, his bird. In the point. Bird. Does Hardy want us to think that this bird sings because he says, aha, I know about celestial matters? Or does he say, this bird sings because the bird knows something about things here on good old terra firma that we don't know?
Well, does it have to be one or the other? He just says he knows something.
He always asks.
I'm not saying it does, but I just want to know if you think it does. Does he want us to think it's got some special knowledge of there or here that Hardy doesn't have?
David, he always asks sneaky questions like that.
No.
That's not as important.
Well, I voted because we were asked to vote.
Do you think that he...
No. I think you have to know more about Hardy than this reveals. To say that.
Well, his other poems don't seem to give him much of a slot in the front row of the Papal Vatican.
Let's pursue that for a minute. Would you say that someone who is not in the front row and does not have a whole lot of knowledge about theological matters does not necessarily want more knowledge about theological matters? Are people who are ignorant theologically necessarily not interested in knowing more theology?
Doesn't follow.
Oh, no.
No?
No.
George said something about we'd have to know more about Hardy. That's a tempting thing, isn't it? But I think that...
This is all we've got right here.
Yeah, we do have other of his poems, as Carl said, and they certainly do touch on the question of Hardy's notions about God to some extent. I think that just on the basis of this, even though we want to know more about him, I think there are some things in here we can look at more closely and try to arrive at. What is he saying in this poem? And we could look at more of his poems later on, and that might affirm or deny what we're saying now.
My vote is back to celestial.
Celestial.
And the reason for that is any terrestrial character who goes in-house knows he's not going to spend forever in his house with the fire. Spring will come and he'll be able to get out. This is that any terrestrial person notices that after winter comes spring, as deadly as it seems. But this bird has more than just waiting for spring. This is New Year's Eve, you know. This is the passing of time.
I took a look at this other one, the respectable bird, that is all in rhyme, and it's all about church and the Bible, and he's all church going, well, I forswear and read, sit on Sundays in my chair and read that moderate man, Voltaire. So he's agnostic. There may be a God, but he isn't certain.
Well, you may call him any name you want to, but I still want you to deal with what he says right here.
All right.
Let me ask a little bit more pointed question. Does Hardy want us to think that this bird is going to participate in life on Earth during this new century? Or is this bird going to be in bird heaven in the new century? Is this bird about to die? And looking forward to its life, or is this bird saying, aha, 1901, we get a new century.
And a new set of feathers.
I don't know, I'm not going to get a new set of feathers.
Birds do, though.
Oh, okay, even old ones.
Mm-hmm. Let's hear that and some answers to that. What is this bird dying today? Is that what Hardy says? There's a bird that's dying, and it's singing because it knows something. It knows that it doesn't have to put up with this next miserable century, or it knows it's going to be in bird heaven, or it's going to live, and it says, the next century, the 20th century cannot be as bad as this 19th was. What does Hardy want us to think?
The bird's looking forward to paradise.
Yep, I would say that.
I'm going to read the whole poem to you, ma'am. You go ahead and speak and see what.
I know, I was just agreeing with her. That I think the bird is looking forward to paradise. And I mean, everything is describing, you know, even the landscape and the wind is singing, is the bird, as it say here, the wind is death lament. It's all pretty, you know, this is the end for the bird. Yeah, and he's singing his last, and he's going to heaven. I mean, maybe he's even on his way to see something.
It's a precious swan song.
Yeah.
George, I think this is Hardy's swan song. I think he's talking about himself.
And then what?
Oh.
And that he has lived his life. He knows he's kind of getting up in age, and he is writing his poetry, throwing his soul out, and creating joy where he can. But that this is not...
Maybe he isn't that old.
Just that's why. Wait, almost done.
I'm not quite sure whether this is Hardy's joy that he is sharing, or whether he is anticipating the joys of heaven, or just the fact that he's now able to do something that he always wanted to do, which is write his poetry and share that with humanity.
Okay, David?
I think he hears the bird, and there's hope there, and he says, I was unaware. So maybe he, that's past tense.
The past tense.
I was unaware. Yeah. Maybe he's getting some, maybe he sees some hope in that old bird's song. I hadn't thought of it.
I found something else. All mankind that haunted nigh had sought their household fires. He didn't. What was he doing out in the snow? Yeah, I think he wanted to hear something. I think he really wanted it. And he wasn't quite sure what the heck it was. He'd been around longer than the bird.
He was tempted by the fires to go in.
Yeah, the bird soars higher than he did.
So he's still at work. He's doing something in spite of the fact that at this time in history or life, he could just sit by the fire.
He sees deathly stuff all around, the columbines and the broken wire strings.
There's a crypt involved. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. He's got a view of his own termination, and somehow or other, the bird doesn't play that song.
Every spirit on earth has seen frivolous as I.
I didn't think of it that way. It's kind of
dismal. Dismal.
Which is what you're looking more for? A hopeful century or a hopeful afterlife?
Are we finished with the other question?
I'd say hopeful century.
No, it's related to that. Right. Definitely part of that. Yes,
I'd say hopeful century.
Hopeful century. And are you saying then that he sees this bird as an indicator that it's okay to be hopeful about the next century? Does Hardy see the bird hopeful about the next century?
I would say Hardy's not hopeful, but the bird is.
About the century coming.
Yeah, he's, unless he's...
And that's what makes him sing, aha, the 20th.
Hardy is jealous of this bird.
Yeah.
Because it knows good things are coming in the 20th or good things are coming in paradise?
Yes.
Oh, okay. I think it's time to look. I've got time to go through the poem. I find for myself at this point, after some discussion, it's always good to look. Maybe we missed a few details, okay? Mm-hmm. So let's just look at the whole poem together again. The Darkling Thrush. I'll read it so you can just kind of think. And you don't have to read it all. Look at the text. It might help you. The Darkling Thrush, December 1900. I leant upon a coppice gate when frost was spectre gray, and winter's dregs made desolate the weakening eye of day. The tangled vine stems scored the sky like strings of broken lyres, and all mankind that haunted nigh had sought their household fires. The land's sharp features seemed to be the century's corpse outlent, his crypt the cloudy canopy, the wind his death lament. The ancient pulse of germ and birth was shrunken hard and dry, and every spirit upon earth seemed fervorless as I. At once a voice arose among the bleak twigs overhead in a full-hearted evensong of joy illimited. An aged thrush, frail, gaunt, and small, in blast-beruffled plume had chosen thus to fling his soul upon the growing gloom. So little cause for carolings of such ecstatic sound was written on terrestrial things afar or nigh around, that I could think there trembled through his happy goodnight air some blessed hope whereof he knew, and I was unaware.
His hope through the bird.
George Steiner.
It sounds Christmassy.
What is your name?
Joyce.
What is it?
Joyce. Well, I was thinking this hope, because we heard a lot about that in one of the lectures this morning. Hope. And I thought of it this morning too, about Emily Dickinson's hope, and thinking of this bird. Hope is that thing with feathers that flutters around the soul and sings the tune without the words and never stops at all.
You better come back on Friday when we're doing Emily Dickinson.
I'll be here.
Okay. what is that saying? That this Hardy's bird has hope of heaven or earth or neither or both or what?
Both. But I think it gave Hardy the hope of the celestial hope that he probably didn't have. This bird brought it to him. It was a message. Everything was gloomy for both of them down the side. But the bird was singing. Because he knew something that Hardy didn't know.
About?
Celestial.
Yeah. So little cause for carolings of such ecstatic sound was written on terrestrial things. Far and nigh around. So so it can't be, there's something higher. I would think that Colonel Chewie's happy good night air, some breath of hope.
But tell us what you think.
No, the Celestials won, didn't we?
Page 25.
Why not till next week, right?
Ever.
The Intercipient. This is Tommy Tucker. At a cathedral service, that with this bright believing band I have no claim to be, that faiths by which my comrades stand seem fantasies to me, and mirage miss their shining land is a strange destiny. Why thus my soul should be consigned to infelicity, why always I must feel as blind to sights my brethren see, why joys they found I cannot find, abides a mystery. Since heart of mine knows not that ease which they know, since it be that he who breathes all's well to these breathes no all's well to me, my lack might move their sympathies and Christian charity. I am like a gazer who should mark an inland company standing and think with heart, heart, the glorious sea, and feel, alas, 'tis but yon darkened windswept pine to me. Yet I would bear my shortcomings with meek tranquility, but for the charge that blessed things I'd liefer not have be. Oh, doth a bird deprived of wings go earthbound willfully? Enough, as yet disquiet clings about us, rest shall we. What is Hardy's faith?
I just want to ask about the second line in that poem. Can that be read, but for the charge that blessed things I'd liefer not have, be? Is that right, or isn't it?
What line?
Second line in the final three line stanza. Could you read it? But for the charge that blessed things I'd liefer not have, be.
What charge was made against Hardy? I would bear my shortcomings. What is his shortcoming? First of all, what does he see?
He can't accept Christ. He can't leave heaven.
I would bear that. Except for the charge that blessed things I leave or not have be. What charge has been made against him?
That he only sees forest and doesn't see the sea.
That he does what?
He sees the forest, but he doesn't see the sea. That he isn't a believer.
But in most of his poetry, he talks about God, so he wants to believe.
Does he write about God as a believer?
He wants to believe, is my belief.
Well, I just give you this point because of what George said earlier. Maybe if we looked at all of his poetry or some of these other poetry, we might get some help in resolving the problem in this other one.
The word leaper, is it? I interpret that to be I'd rather.
You got it.
And he's talking about the faiths that his comrades stand by or have, but he doesn't have them. And so the charge is that those blessed things, the faiths that his comrades have, I'd rather not have me. I take that to mean that he's saying either they aren't true or I can't believe that they're true.
Which bothers him more? His fellow citizens saying, you wicked man, you choose not to believe, or the fact that he can't believe in God or whatever? Which bothers him more? What his people, what his fellow citizens are accusing him of, or the fact that he can't discover his God?
Yes, which, he can't believe.
That bothers him more than the fact that the people are accusing him of being a deliberate...
He sounds envious to me.
Yeah.
He's sorry he can't, but it's a mystery to him.
Yeah. And I think in this moment, even the bird sees something he can't, and he feels it.
Do you agree with that, Colonel?
Sure, I don't understand that line yet. I see it could be read two ways.
Okay, let's look at that whole stanza.
Yet I would bear my shortcomings with meek tranquility. What is his shortcoming?
A lack of belief.
I would bear my shortcomings with meek tranquility, but for the charge that blessed things I liefer not have be. Who makes the charge?
The people, the other people who do believe.
Yeah.
So, charge that blessed things I liefer not have.
What do they?
I would really not have that, they say. But they say they are, they be.
And
see, that's a different.
Is Hardy saying that he would like not to have those beliefs? Or is he saying that's what he's accused of?
They're accusing him of not making that choice to have them.
Of making the choice not to have them.
Yeah.
And which bothers him more? The fact that they are accusing him of making the choice of not believing, or the fact that he can't believe?
The fact that they're making the charge that he can't believe.
Eunice says no. She says he's more bothered by the fact that he doesn't have faith.
I don't see where in this poem there's a charge coming at him from outside.
How do you read that stanza? I would bear my shortcoming with meek tranquility, but for the charge that blessed things I liefer not have be. Who's making the charge?
That's his charge.
That's his charge.
Because he wants to believe and he can't. I don't see anywhere in there where it says my comrades stand, the faith by which my comrades stand, seem fantasies to me. That doesn't say that his comrades are saying you should believe and don't.
But the next line, read the next two lines after that about the bird. And that kind of explains it, I think.
That's four lines in the last. Wait the bottom.
Well, doth a bird deprived of wings go earthbound willfully? I think that a bird is earthbound if it has its wings taken off or its wings clipped, but it doesn't do it willfully.
No, nor is he doing it willfully.
If Hardy feels that he is like a bird that has been deprived of wings, does he think that he has deliberately cut off his wings?
Not with that metaphor.
The people accuse him of why don't you fly, and he says, I don't have the wings you people do. You see the sea, I see the trees, you see what seems to me a fantasy, you see a shining light.